This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
I wake up in the morning, long before the dawn. Sock feet on the cold plank floors, just put your work boots on. You stoke the fire, then check your kid, break into a smile. Peace for the sleeping baby child. Precious the sleeping baby smile.
Hello there, and welcome to Mountain News and World Report. I'm Willa Johnson, and I'll be your host. First in today's program, we bring you two pieces from the Ohio Valley Resource. In the first, we hear about the new director for the Appalachian Regional Commission. And in the second, we'll learn about a regional outbreak of hepatitis A that has been linked to the addiction crisis. Then we'll hear a presentation at a health roundtable hosted by the Appalachian Regional Commission in 2017 at East Tennessee State University in Johnson City, Tennessee, in which Michael Mate, a senior fellow at the NORC Walsh Center for Rural Health Analysis, discusses research into diseases of despair. We'll finish today's episode with audio recorded at the What's Next EKY conference in Hindman, Kentucky, from late April.
The rattle of the chain and the music of the wheels on the rail. The click and clack of old Jim's shoes and swish at a fly from his tail. We pull the coal, we drag the timber and lay the garden by. Wipe the tears from the sleeping baby's eye. Kiss the tears from the baby's eye.
Not long after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky squared off with President Trump over funding for the Appalachian Regional Commission, the ARC has a new federal co-chair. And as Becca Schimmel reports, the commission's newest member has close ties to Senator McConnell.
Longtime McConnell aide Tim Thomas says he can see a day when the Appalachian Regional Commission is no longer needed.
My vision for ARC is to see the day that this agency can shutter its doors because it's goals and objectives have been reached in large measure. It will not happen on my watch. It will probably not happen on the watch of my successor, but I can see that day on the horizon.
President Trump had wanted the ARC's end to come much sooner than that. The president's first budget proposed eliminating ARC funding, but Thomas's boss, Senator McConnell, restored that funding. Thomas worked for McConnell for almost 10 years as both a field representative and a field office director. He says that helped him become familiar with ARC and the work that it does.
Coming from Kentucky, obviously I know how important ARC is to Eastern Kentucky. Familiarity with those communities and their needs, and I think all of that just prepares me for my role here.
Thomas wants to focus on diversifying the economy by helping small business and entrepreneurs in the region. Those familiar with the ARC say Thomas will need political savvy to make that happen.
So one of the advantages I think that Tim Thomas has is his connection with McConnell and that leadership and his ability to go to these other federal agencies and get their attention.
That's Ron Eller, Appalachian author and distinguished professor of history emeritus at the University of Kentucky. He says most Republican presidents have sought to zero out the ARC budget, but powerful members of Congress whose districts benefit usually push back. Eller says the majority of the power of the ARC is in the hands of the governors of the Appalachian region states.
The governors, since the late 1960s, have really lost interest to a great degree in the economic problems of the Appalachian portions of their states.
Eller says there has been tension in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia over what economic development means for the region. He says the dominance of the coal industry has prevented alternative uses for federal funds to promote economic development. Eller says now that coal is playing a smaller role in the economy, Central Appalachia states are looking at alternatives for economic development. Thomas has said small business development is one of his top priorities.
Let me tell you, I am bullish on Appalachia. If it were a stock, I would be buying because I believe it to be an undervalued asset.
Thomas says most new jobs are created by small businesses, and there's no reason to think the next great entrepreneur can't come from Appalachia. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Health officials in the Ohio Valley are dealing with a multi-state regional outbreak of hepatitis A, with nearly 500 cases in four states. As part of the Ohio Valley Resource series, Rural Risk, Mary Meehan reports this outbreak is just the latest public health threat linked to the region's addiction crisis.
The hepatitis A outbreak growing in the Louisville area since last summer reached a new peak recently with a travel advisory from Indiana health officials. They told Hoosiers heading to Kentucky to get vaccinated against hepatitis A. Soon Kentucky's acting health commissioner, Dr. Jeffrey Howard, was pushing back via the state's official YouTube channel.
Some misleading information has raised concerns about travel to Kentucky and even the Derby. Let me say that it is safe to travel to Kentucky, and it is safe to attend the Kentucky Derby.
Later that same day, West Virginia health officials announced a Hep A outbreak in Kanawha and Putnam counties. What started last summer as a Hep A spike in a few counties has grown now to nearly 500 cases in four states. That's a number rising daily. Dr. Rahul Gupta is the health commissioner in West Virginia.
One of the things we understand in public health is when we have an outbreak of disease, you can certainly accumulate a number of people having that disease very quickly.
In every impacted state, the rates of infection are well above the norm. Kentucky alone is at more than 370 cases. The annual average is 20. Another unusual factor in this Hep A outbreak is that drug users are at the core. Usually, Hep A outbreaks are caused by ingesting food contaminated with fecal matter.
Individuals who may have substance use disorder and may be using illicit drugs may also not be able to keep up their personal hygiene, which puts them at high risk for being infected with hepatitis A.
Kentucky's acting commissioner Howard says the Centers for Disease Control is tracking outbreaks in five states with this unusual transmission. That means Hep A now joins Hep C and HIV as health threats linked to the addiction crisis. That's complicated by the regional nature of the infection.
In terms of the biggest challenge of responding to these outbreaks, it's definitely working the outbreaks that are across state lines. For example, we had an HIV cluster investigation in northern Kentucky where for the first time in the history of Kentucky, we had HIV transmission. It's the most common risk factor being intravenous drug use.
But there are hopeful signs. First, the best prevention against Hep A is a good hand washing with soap and water. Second, there is a vaccine, and all health officials the resource contacted said vaccine supplies are adequate. Dr. James Caskell is the health commissioner at the Athens, Ohio City County Health Department. He feels an outbreak can be contained, but there are constant barriers to treatment in rural areas.
Communication is a problem in Appalachia sometimes.
Dr. Craig Humbaugh is the Fayette County Health Commissioner. He was previously Kentucky's chief epidemiologist. He says it's tough to know the magnitude of any outbreak.
There are always a certain percentage of cases, sometimes larger than others, where the cases are hidden or they go unrecognized.
Better access to testing may be adding to the number of identified cases. Humbaugh says there's now more attention focused on the region's health woes, which could lead to more federal help.
So there's a human cost and a financial cost, but it seems that we are getting more attention.
Those costs, he says, will likely grow as the addiction crisis gives rise to more infectious disease outbreaks through the Ohio Valley. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan in Richmond, Kentucky.
Next, we'll hear Michael Mate's presentation at the 2017 Health Roundtable that the ARC hosted at ETSU in Johnson City, Tennessee. Mate is a senior fellow at the NORC Walsh Center for Rural Health Analysis, and he discusses his research into what he terms diseases of despair in the Appalachian region. We wanted to let you know in advance that Mate's research looks at statistics around suicide deaths in the region. We understand this topic is upsetting to many and wanted to give our listeners a choice about listening to the following presentation.
When we look at this, we broadened this a little bit, and we're focusing on what have been termed the diseases of despair. Sometimes they're also called deaths of despair or despair deaths. And essentially, it's made up of three components: overdose, which includes alcohol poisonings, prescription drug, and illegal overdose deaths, suicide, and alcoholic liver disease and cirrhosis. And of course, these kind of fit together as things that are happening in a community when other things aren't going well in a community. So they've thought about this in this context of despair. Some people like that, some people don't. But at the end of the day, I think it's a way to conceptualize these issues together. So what I'm going to do now, today, what I want to do is I want to share with you some of the findings from this report. We're going to start at the high level with these broad diseases of despair, and then we're going to get a little bit more granular into some of the individual conditions as well as into data by subregion and by state. One of the things I do want to note is that the data we are looking at is from 2015. I think this is noteworthy for a couple of reasons. One, the report that Julie talked about included data from 2008 to 2014, and some of those measures are the same. And even as we look from those years to 2015, we see a big spike in opioids in particular. But what I really want to point out to you is that the data that we have from 2015 likely predates a lot of what we are seeing now, which is fentanyl and carfentanyl driven. So I think as we look into the next couple years, as dramatic as some of this is, it may be the beginning of something and not necessarily the end. So please keep that in mind. So we did this work focusing on a few different hypotheses. The first was that the disparities related to these diseases of despair are greater within the Appalachian region than outside of Appalachia, that Appalachian disparities are driving national trends showing rising mortality from diseases of despair, and that within Appalachia that we would see disparities concentrated based on subregion, on county economic status, and by rurality. So looking at the first of these, so what you see here on the left is the all-cause mortality rate for ages 15 to 64. The line on top, the blue line, is Appalachia, all of the Appalachian counties. The yellow line is the rest of the United States. And what you see here is that the United States just experienced its first uptick in mortality rate since the 1990s. Much of that is driven by the opioid crisis. Back in the 1990s, there was a brief uptick as a result of the AIDS epidemic. Now it's opioids that are driving this uptick. When you compare that, though, to the chart on the graph on the right, this is the diseases of despair. Again, those three causes of death. Again, blue is Appalachia, yellow is the rest of the United States. And what you see is that these diseases of despair are rising faster in the Appalachian region than in the United States as a whole. So this is contributing to this uptick in mortality rates. And because Appalachia is rising faster, Appalachia is contributing disproportionately to that uptick in mortality rates. So when we look at this by individual diseases of despair, this is where we start to break it out. You see that overall in the Appalachian region, there's a 37% higher rate of diseases of despair than the rest of the United States. Again, this is 2015 mortality data. But when you break this out, the rate is 65% higher in Appalachia for for overdose, including opioids, but overdose in general, than the rest of the United States, 20% higher for suicide, and 8% higher for alcoholic liver disease and cirrhosis of the liver. When we break this out by state, you see some of these trends in terms of how this looks by state. And you know, what's interesting to me about this is that it really is a wide range. So you look in the highest rates overall are West Virginia and Kentucky, 95.4 per 100,000 deaths in West Virginia, 91.1 per 100,000 deaths in Kentucky overall for diseases of despair. But within this, you see that overdose mortality is highest for West Virginia, Appalachian Kentucky, and Appalachian Ohio. Suicide mortality is highest for Appalachian South Carolina, Appalachian Virginia, and Appalachian North Carolina. And alcoholic liver disease is highest for Appalachian Kentucky, Appalachian Virginia, and West Virginia. But again, look at how widely this varies. So what's interesting to me is that this isn't entirely driven by poverty, because there are states that experience a lot of poverty in here that are not as affected as other states. So as we think about what the solutions are, I think we need to be thinking more broadly. It's not just economics. So looking at the disparities within Appalachia. So this is where we looked at subregion, county economic status, and rurality. What we see is that by subregion, the highest rates are in North Central Appalachia and Central Appalachia. When we look at county economic status, alcoholic liver disease and overdose mortality are 38 and 34% higher respectively in the distressed counties as compared to non-distressed counties. And in terms of suicide, rurality, the suicide mortality and alcoholic liver diseases were 15 and 13% higher in the non-metro or rural counties. One of the things that surprised us, and this is something that we may be able to start generating some hypotheses on, we're starting to think about this, when we looked at overdose mortality, it was actually 6% lower in the rural counties in Appalachia as compared to the metro counties. That was a surprise. And that's different than the findings from the disparities report that Jolie presented on. So what this may be showing is that there is a trend where this is now moving into the urban counties very quickly, and they may have caught up and maybe even surpassed some of the rural counties. When we look at the distressed versus the non-distressed counties, the larger metro areas are typically not distressed. They're not distressed. It's not typically. They are not distressed. And when we do look at that, the rate by distressed county has gone down a lot as well. Again, it seems to be an indicator that this may be moving into some of the urban counties. So there may be something there to look at as we start to track this into the future. So digging a little bit deeper and looking at overdose deaths in particular, this is one of the findings that to me is really interesting and important. This is looking at overdose deaths, male and female, by age range. So look at the 25 to 54 age bracket, the three middle age brackets. This is where the highest burden is for overdose deaths. In particular, look at the 25 to 44 age range. So for men in that age bracket, 25 to 44, they have a 75% greater chance of dying as a result of overdose if they live in Appalachia than men in the rest of the United States. And for women, even though the rates are overall a little bit lower for women, women living in Appalachia, 25 to 44, have double the likelihood of dying as a result of overdose than women in the rest of the United States. So think about what that means. This is not only affecting our populations disproportionately, but it is affecting people in the prime of their lives. And as we think about this from an economic development perspective, this is people in their prime working years. So again, to me, this is a very, very striking finding in this report. And then taking this one step further in looking at not only the variance across states again, but what proportion of these overdose deaths are related to opioids. What we see is that 69% of the deaths overall throughout the region, 69% of the overdose mortality is a result of opioids. Within that, though, you see this wide range. So in West Virginia, they have the highest rate of overdose deaths attributable to opioids at 88%. In Appalachian, Maryland, it's 86%. And in Appalachian, Ohio, it's 82%. Contrast that with Mississippi and Alabama. In Appalachian, Mississippi, it's only 34%. In Appalachian, Alabama, it's only 44%. So again, this wide variance across the region, I think, is really intriguing. And as we think about what is different in these subregions, I think there may be some things there to investigate. So then, just to summarize this, looking back at these hypotheses. So again, the first hypothesis was that the disparities related to diseases of despair are greater within the Appalachian region than the non-Appalachian region. What we were able to see is that the mortality rate from the diseases of despair was 37% higher in Appalachia than in non-Appalachian United States, and that it was driven by overdose mortality, which was 65% higher in Appalachia. Looking at the second hypothesis, that Appalachian disparities are driving national trends showing the rising mortality rate, what we were able to show is that both the Appalachian and non-Appalachian U.S. have seen increases in mortality related to diseases of despair, but the Appalachian rates are rising faster. The disparity between Appalachia and non-Appalachia is growing, which again shows this contribution to the overall rise in the United States. And then the third hypothesis, within Appalachia, disparities are concentrated based on Appalachian subregion, county economic status, and rurality. What we were able to show was a little bit more mixed there. Within Appalachia, the disparities related to the diseases of despair were more concentrated in central and north central Appalachia, as well as the economically distressed counties. But the rate of overdose deaths was actually greater in the metro counties. Again, this was a bit of a surprise to us. Although the other diseases of despair, alcoholic liver disease and suicide, were still higher in the rural communities.
That was researcher Michael Mate discussing data around so-called diseases of despair at a 2017 health roundtable hosted by the ARC at ETSU in Johnson City, Tennessee. If you or someone you know is thinking about suicide or would like emotional support, you can reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Finally, in this episode of Mountain News and World Report, we visit the What's Next EKY conference that took place in Hindman, Kentucky in late April. The audio you'll hear features Betsy Whaley of the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development explaining the history, values, and mission of the What's Next EKY project.
When you think about things that have changed in East Kentucky, the labor movement around safer working conditions for coal, how did that happen? It was people, it was ideas, it was energy, it was timing. It was breaking down barriers. It was people getting organized for collective action. And that's really what What's Next East Kentucky is about. The belief that together we can do more than any one of our communities could ever do alone. And that together we really can change East Kentucky. You know, as Val said earlier, we are at a tipping point. We are at a pivotal moment in East Kentucky's history. And we are at a moment of the democratization of information. You know, with social media, people have access to each other and to information, good and bad, in ways that they didn't in the past. And I think the collapse of the coal industry, you know, the reduction of all those jobs, that all brings us to a place where people are saying, what's next? What's next? And so last year, Mesa convened a group of our partners, including Brushy Fork, Community Farm Alliance, Apple Shop, the Foundation for Appalachia Kentucky, Robert representing the e-communities and the foundation, Bluegrass Community Foundation, to talk about how could we better collaborate and work together. And you know, collaboration is really different than cooperation. Cooperation is, okay, I'm gonna do this and you're gonna do that. Check. Collaboration is, what are we going to do together? How are we going to really unify our efforts? And so that was a really hard process. We spent 5 or 6 months kind of figuring out what are the values that we can share and what can we support. And what came out of that was the intention to support the development of an East Kentucky community network. And so we sponsored a Brushy Fork track. Rodney was really instrumental in helping us make that happen, where we brought in some folks from rural support partners over in Asheville. They've done a lot of research around healthy networks, and they coordinate lots of networks, like the Central Appalachian Network and the Appalachian Funders Network. And so they came in and did some training with us, and we built some relationships about what is it going to take to make a network work. And so what came out of that was a steering committee. And all of the folks here, plus a couple of others, are on that steering committee. And we've been meeting since Brushy Fork happened to kind of figure out what's next. And the name, What's Next East Kentucky, came out of that work of the steering committee. And so our vision that the steering committee has put together, and these are all folks from communities. I sit on that committee to support them, but this is really the work of community folks. So the vision that we came out of that process with is that we aim to create a network of communities and resource providers that can work together to foster thriving rural communities in Appalachian Kentucky. We want to create a greater impact on the economic development of our region. By sharing ideas, encouraging mutual learning, collaborating on regional projects and initiatives, and bringing greater resources to our communities, we will establish a stronger and more diverse economy in these mountains we call home. Our mission is building relationships and connecting communities to support a thriving Appalachian Kentucky. The values that we decided on together as a steering committee are inclusion. We want this to be an inclusive movement. All ages, socioeconomic status, diversity in ethnicity, whatever kind of diversity we can include, we want that to be. Our second value is we want to let the communities lead. You know, a lot of the development efforts in our region have been top down. And that happens as long as the money is coming from the top down. The folks on this panel today represent bottom up development that comes from the communities and works its way up. And that is a value of this network. Mutual respect, that there has to be, this table has to be big enough to incorporate people of different political views, of different religious values, but we have to be able to agree on what we can agree on and what we can work together on. And mutual accountability, that if we're in this together, we have to be in this together, and we have to be accountable to each other and doing our part.
To learn more about the What's Next EKY project, visit www.maced.org. That's it for this episode of Mountain News and World Report. Music on this episode comes from the soon-to-be-released June Apple recording of Nate Pauly, with a tune called Old Jim. The full album called Headed Back will be released in the coming months. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can visit our website at www.wmmt.org or download Mountain News wherever you get your podcast. I've been your host, Willa Johnson, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio, broadcasting from the Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
With a hug and a prayer and a haversack lunch, we head out to the barn. You bridle up the old brown mule and shake the harness on. You hook it high, you strap it low, and double check the lines. Pull another long day into mine. Driving the mule into mine. Clang of the dragon, the rattle of the chain, and the music of the wheels on the rail. The click and clack of old Jim's shoes and swish at a fly from his tail. We pull the coal, we drag the timber and lay the garden by. Wipe the tears from the sleeping baby's eye. Kiss the tears from the baby's eye. While the children played, Daddy worked and prayed till they laid him to rest on the hill. Neath the call of the old hooed owl and the lonesome whippoorwill. I'm a wealthy man, it's plain to see. I'm rich and my family at home. Leaving my children to carry on. Leaving you here to sing my song.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.